Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, welcome back to Basketball Conference, the ACC Football Podcast. My name is Joey Weaver. He is Mike McDaniel. Mike, welcome back from Tallahassee. How was your trip?
Oh, my God. It was unbelievable. And then the game happened.
Pretty good.
I need to apologize in advance. I sound okay at the moment, but if I go up or down an octave, I'm completely and totally screwed. So excuse my voice or lack thereof, I guess.
Well, it's been a whirlwind, to say the very least. You had a long drive ahead of you today and just recently got in. It's Tuesday night here. For what it's worth, for those new to the program, typically we will record these recaps probably on the Sunday night time frame unless there's a major conflict. But you can expect these episodes up on Mondays. But with the way the schedule works out, here we are Tuesday evening recording a recap of the week. And so, Mike, let's start with your Hokies. Number 20, Virginia Tech 24. Number 19, Florida State. Three measly little points. And, Mike, this game did not go the way that we kind of expected it would, to say the very least.
You are correct. Before I dive into this real quick, shout out to our boy James Coleman, Florida State contributor to this podcast, writes for Gridiron Now. He's done a great job for us. Invited me and my buddies to his tailgate. He was awesome, as we knew he would be. Tailgate was awesome. It was a great time. Met a lot of really good people. So shout out to James real quick. The game itself, I couldn't believe what was happening. That's kind of my takeaway. The Virginia Tech defense had 9 new starters on that side of the football. And their team speed on defense was nothing short of unbelievable. And it's beyond the athletes going out and making plays and just being fast and being athletes. It was the sophomores and juniors, you know, new juniors like Reggie Floyd, like freshmen, sophomores knew what they were doing. And like the team speed on defense was unbelievable. So that was my first takeaway right off the jump. And it was very clear on the first drive, on defense. So Virginia Tech goes down, scores. Very impressive first drive for Josh Jackson, that offense. That was his biggest drive as a Hokie. It's not even close. He was excellent on that opening drive. And then defensively, for them to come out and snuff out 2 quick swing passes that got Florida State's athletes in space. Khalil Adler, excellent game. Divine Diablo, you know, the secondary was great. Caleb Farley, of course, had a sack, 2 interceptions, was named ACC Player of the Week. Rayshard Ashby, 9 tackles, 2 for loss, and a forced fumble in his new spot, taking Andrew Patuapuaka's spot at backer. The Virginia Tech defense is the big takeaway for me. Now, Florida State's play calling, we'll get into that. That's a whole nother level of weird at times, but Virginia Tech was more physical at the point of attack, and their team speed on defense completely overwhelmed Florida State, which had a ton of athletes on the field at all times. So that was my initial takeaway. Offensively, on the other side, Joey, I thought the offense overall, while it was very frustrating that, you know, the Hokies kept getting good field position the entire game and just couldn't punch it in the end zone, there were a lot of good things happening on those drives that gives me hope for the rest of the season that they'll figure things out. They would move the ball, then bad penalty backs him up. They would move the ball, you snap it over Jackson's head, then take a bad sack. Things like that were happening pretty frequently in this football game. Number one, give Florida State's defense a lot of credit. They were on the field a ton in this football game, and for the most part, they hung tough because their offense wasn't giving them a ton of support. So it was a very good defensive effort, I thought, overall for Florida State. But the Virginia Tech offense, I know the takeaway is, they could have scored more points. This could have been a lot uglier than it was. But give Florida State's defense a little bit of credit, and for Virginia Tech, be more consistent in running the football because it was working early. They kind of went away from it, and I think that's where they started to kind of hit a snag later in the game. They ended up going back to it eventually, and that's when Jackson got back into a rhythm. He finally hits Eric Kuma on that final drive. He slips a tackle, and he's gone. So that's the story of the game. Just Florida State's inability to consistently win at the point of attack, both offensively and defensively. And really, the Hokies just grinded this out. And I was very surprised. I guess I shouldn't have been, but I was surprised that Bud Foster had these kids ready this quickly. I knew it would be a work in progress. He's an excellent defensive coordinator, best in the country, in my opinion, after last night's performance, if there was any question. And I'm just surprised he had them ready to go defensively that quick. And it was a hell of a coaching job. Fuente coached circles around Willie Taggart. The offense for Florida State at best was gimmicky. And that they need to clean that up. They got too many athletes to play with a gimmicky offense where Cam Akers is taking direct snaps. They're better than that, and they have athletes already on the roster that can contribute in a normal offensive scheme. So they just need to clean some things up. I think Florida State will be fine, but big-time statement win for the Hokies here on national TV in the opener.
I would agree with that, to say the very least. Mike, you and I had different experiences watching this game. You were obviously there in the stadium in person watching it, and I was sitting on my couch watching it on TV. And the whole time, I'm with you. I was kind of shocked by what I was seeing. This is not what I expected from Florida State, knowing how much talent they have and all this. The whole time, really, I sat here trying to figure out, I felt like I needed to reevaluate one team or the other, maybe a little bit of both, but I'll be honest, it's not really a meaning, you know, I don't mean disrespect towards Virginia Tech in saying that I feel like this tells us a little more about Florida State than it does about the Hokies. I think the Hokies were sound. I was really impressed with them on offense compared to what we saw towards the end of last year and generally during the Justin Fuente era so far, but man, Florida State, especially on offense, looked bad. They looked bad. They looked out of sorts. There was a lot of weird play calling. They kept trying to go, you know, east-west rather than north-south, and that was not going well. Their offensive line could not block Virginia Tech, and I question if that's because Virginia Tech is just so otherworldly good up front or if it's just that Florida State's offensive line, they looked soft. They looked like they didn't, you know, really understand their assignments or something. Florida State got nothing going in the run game the whole night. If you look at it, they had 94 yards on 28 carries, but that's deceptive because Cam Akers had an 85-yard carry in there. And other than that, on his 13 carries, he had minus 3 yards, right? You figure the whole team had 27 carries that went for 9 yards, and they had one that went for 85, right? Like that's not consistent production. They were way more productive in the passing game. I thought DeAndre Francois looked pretty good for the Seminoles. I don't know why they were going away from him as much as they were. It felt like that was the only way that they had to move the ball all night. So I just thought there was a lot of disappointment and strangeness about the Seminoles offense. Maybe it's just kind of an early cobwebs, I mean, not cobwebs as much as like growing pains, trying to figure out a new scheme or something, but this was just a very odd game. Not what I was expecting at all. The final score, 24-3, I feel like it's indicative, but also not indicative of how the game went. Virginia Tech was pretty dominant throughout, but benefited from a blocked punt that turned into a touchdown. They were plus 5 in turnovers. Yeah, they recovered all 3 fumbles, I think, in the game, and you know, there was some luck in there too. So I guess what I'm saying is I'm not really ready to say that Virginia Tech is all of a sudden a national title contender or really going to push Clemson to maybe win the ACC. I'm not yet.
God damn it. Why not?
I'm sorry to try to bring you down off this cloud. I probably shouldn't at this point, but to me, this is, you know, Virginia Tech is good. They're well coached. I think, you know, I think they were probably better than I expected them to be. Josh Jackson, I thought, looked really good. I texted you as much last night. You know, I think the offense looked better than I was expecting. The defense performed really well given all the new guys. And so I think they outperformed my expectations, but not nearly on the level that Florida State underperformed my expectations. We'll say that. So if I'm really recalibrating off this game, it's probably more recalibration on what Florida State is or isn't rather than Virginia Tech. And maybe that's unfair. Maybe that's, you know, maybe I'm a little bit of a hater. I don't really know, but that's kind of my feeling I got off this game.
It's week one, Joey. So I don't think anything you said one way or another can be taken. You know, people will be angry, but who cares? It's week one. It's week one. Also, like, Virginia Tech's got this track record too of like winning a big game and then laying an egg. So not to throw water on the whole thing, but it was obviously a really good win to go into that environment and win in week one. I mean, that's gigantic, but I'd agree with you. I mean, I'm surprised that Florida State was not more ready to play. I just think they got completely overwhelmed. I agree with you. I, you know, Bill Connolly from SB Nation said it was one of the most unlucky games in as far as turnovers for any team in college football in like the last 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, turnovers are luck. Who would have thought?
Yeah. Speaking of which, and by the way, before we move on to that real quick, one of the things I was going to bring up is you talk about, you know, Virginia Tech laying an egg. I mean, they could, but look at this schedule coming up. FCS William & Mary, Eastern Carolina, who just got beat by an FCS team.
North Carolina A&T, for those keeping
score. North Carolina A&T, that's right. And then a road trip to Old Dominion, who just got the crap kicked out of them by Liberty. So if Virginia Tech loses one of those games, I mean, goodness, don't do that. The next, you know, formidable opponent they should have is the very end of September at Duke. And until then, I think they got a little bit of time to get their bearings and make sure that none of that was a fluke last night. So,
yeah. Hey, Joey, wasn't initially going to do this, but that at Duke game after last night, Prob's going.
You're going.
Yeah, 100%.
Well, I remember the last time you went to Duke, you had a big old time down there. So why not make a return voyage?
Make a return voyage, piss off a bunch of frat boys, and let's do this thing.
A tradition unlike any other. Mike, you mentioned that turnovers have something to do with luck. Nobody learned that lesson more than our friends at Miami this weekend.
Ooh.
Transition right there. LSU 33, Miami 17. And that's probably closer than this game actually was in a lot of respects, Mike.
I mean, it was 30-3 at one point. So, I mean, yeah.
Yeah. Shoe buddy, Miami. This did not go well. This did not go well at all. LSU got out. They were up 27-3 at halftime. You know, this was a bit of a beatdown. A lot of it thanks to LSU's defense. I think that their defense was a little more physical maybe than Miami's was. LSU by its nature is a very physical team, very physical program. And so if you're a team that's going to rely more on speed than on power to get things done, that's going to happen sometimes, you know, but I didn't feel like LSU maybe looked great at all times on offense, especially. And Miami certainly didn't look great on offense in a lot of cases, but LSU made a lot more plays and really got this game out of hand and out of reach for Miami probably by the end of the third quarter. This is a pretty disappointing showing for Miami, and I think especially from Malik Rozier.
Rozier sucks, dude. Like, I don't know. let's call it what it is at this point. You know, I've been saying this for about a year. You've been saying it for about a year. Cam Underwood, our buddy from State of the U, God bless him, has been saying it for about a year. Rozier is bad. You know, there are a lot of really good players on Miami's team. There are, and they just couldn't really do anything because Rozier couldn't deliver them the football. One of my favorite moments from this entire telecast was when they were discussing the fact that, oh, Rozier, that was unlucky on that interception. It was a tip pass. I mean, he threw it into four defenders and he got run back for a touchdown on that pick six.
Mm-hmm.
And that was only, you know, the start of his issues. Really, really rough game. LSU's defense looked dominant. 33-17, nowhere near indicative of the final score. I had a hell of a time with the Florida State fans watching it at one of the bars down there. That was great.
Imagine that.
Yeah, imagine that. And I say one of the bars, I mean multiple bars. But yeah, imagine that. We had a great time bonding over Miami losing. And then we beat that ass the next day. So it was cool.
overall successful weekend for you, Mike.
Overall, really successful weekend. Big winner, the Florida Gators. anyway. Yeah, no, Miami looked rough. Defensively, it was okay, but it wasn't like Joe Burrow was like this, you know, rock star quarterback for them. He was fine. I think LSU will be fine if Burrow can develop. That's something you and I discussed, Joey, over text while watching this game. It was like, hey, man, if like Burrow develops here, LSU could be relatively competent in a really tough division in the SEC. So, yeah, really good win for LSU. Miami, like, they can shake this off and still play, you know, a pretty good schedule here in the Coastal and be all right. I mean, I think they'll be fine. They'll be right in this thing as far as the ACC is concerned. This is a really ugly loss, and I think it's fair to temper expectations on Miami as long as Malik Rozier is the guy.
Mike, can I review the Miami drive chart in this game?
Is this going to be dramatic, like solid verbal? Let's do it.
I can't do it dramatic, but I will tell, if any parents are listening to this with kids in the car, this drive chart is borderline not safe for work, probably not safe for your, you know, you want to cover your kids' ears for this one. Here we go. Miami, punt, field goal, missed field goal, punt, punt, interception return for a touchdown, punt, punt, interception, touchdown, touchdown, turnover on downs, turnover on downs.
It sounded like the Florida State drive chart, except you had two touchdowns in there.
Yeah, not great. One of the things we alluded to transition into this as well is that there were multiple turnovers in this game, and none of them were received by Miami's defense. The damn turnover chain, as I refer to it a lot of times at home, the turnover chain did not make an appearance in this game. Miami was minus two in turnovers, a couple of picks thrown by Malik Rozier, or excuse me, Rozier, as we've learned in the broadcast. And it's one of those things, Mike, that you can see when Miami doesn't get short fields and even turns it over a couple times themselves, you know, it puts their team in a big hole, and it's hard to dig out of that. The biggest takeaway to me, I think, is kind of a confirmation of what we've talked about and what Cam talked about in the preview and all this is, honestly, Miami's season is going to come down to its quarterback situation. And that, for a lot of teams, you could say that, right? Most any team, it's their quarterback situation. And that sounds like an oversimplification, but to me, it's more an issue of how Mark Richt handles Miami's quarterback situation, because there's kind of two things involved here. Is A, we know what Malik Rozier, this is going to take some getting used to, what Malik Rozier is at this point. It's not a particularly effective passer. He's going to hit some big plays here and there. He's going to support in the run game. But if you want a guy who's going to sit there and carve up a defense and complete 65 to 70% of his passes and take care of the ball, he's not that. So the question becomes, A, does Mark Richt stick with him? And B, if he chooses not to, and we've talked about there's some chance that he won't, you know, make that decision to go away from him. But if he does, what is there backing up Malik Rozier? We think we've got some good ideas. You know, Nikosi Perry is a name that's been tossed around. There's some talent there theoretically, but the fact that we were 2 weeks before the season and he was already committing to Rozier, it's like, I don't know if that's because he's, you know, just the guy, the returning starter, or if they don't really have great talent behind him. And if that becomes necessary, I don't know what Miami is going to become this season. It's going to be another season relying on turnovers in the defense. And I just don't know how sustainable that is. So it's kind of a further confirmation to me, Mike, that this season is going to entirely come down to the quarterback situation, how Mark Richt chooses to handle it, and what options he really even has.
Yeah. And I think the talent is there from a recruiting standpoint, a quarterback, but you know, if Mark Richt is seeing something different in practice than we're seeing, then Rozier's his guy. Unfortunately, I got to also get used to that. Yeah, I mean, I named him, you know, I wrote a huge preview for Inside the ACC. I named Malik Rozier the most important player in the entire conference because I think his play really dictates what Miami is both on a conference level and on a national level. Is this a team that can compete with Clemson with him at quarterback? No. But if he were to play well the rest of the year and get some confidence, which no reason for me to believe that's going to change, but say he did, can Miami push Clemson if they made it to the ACC championship game? Sure. They could hang with him a little bit. It wouldn't be 35-3 or whatever the hell it was last year. I could tell you that. So he's the most important player in the entire division. In the Coastal and really in the conference, because he completely dictates what's going to happen on that entire side of the conference. He's a huge variable, a quarterback for a team that's overall pretty good. So they need to figure things out one way or another. And if Richt is too stubborn or just can't go away from him, there's going to be huge variability week to week with this Miami team. There's just no way of getting around it.
Mike, let's move on. Alabama 51, my Louisville Cardinals 14. You talk about important players in the conference. Louisville replacing arguably the most important player in the conference, Lamar Jackson, and it didn't go great. Honestly, I mean, this is, again, kind of what we said was going to happen. Alabama, really, really good. Louisville, not quite as good, for better or worse. Overall, first of all, my story of this game is I played softball with a bunch of buddies who all went to Alabama, and so I made the choice to go to the Alabama alumni bar here in Houston to watch this game, wearing a Louisville shirt, naturally. And I made a lot of friends, and nobody gave me any weird looks, and it was all just a very comfortable environment. Let's just say that, right?
Yes.
Sure, why not? Yeah, this game was just pretty much a beatdown from the beginning. Louisville was down 28-0 at halftime, and it just never really looked like they had any semblance of a chance. The defense, I mean, pretty much what we expected. Alabama, it's one of these things where it's hard to evaluate Louisville against Alabama because, yes, Alabama made Louisville look bad, but this is not the first or the last team that Alabama is going to make look bad. It's just the first one this season. So what can you take away from it? You know, maybe a little bit limited, but Louisville's defense really struggled to stop the run in a lot of cases. They struggled to stop the pass. Tua Tagovailoa, 12 of 16 for 227 and two touchdowns. I mean, this was a tune-up game for Alabama. It wasn't all that close. Louisville looked, you know, there was a little bit of something on offense. You know, Juwan Pass had some good throws. It looks like they've got some talent in the receiving core that can maybe be the base of a functional, you know, somewhat talented offense even, you know, for a lot of this year. But I wasn't super encouraged by what I saw. But then again, I don't know that I really could have expected to be encouraged by anything in this game really from the start.
I agree with you. I think my one takeaway from this game is I thought Juwan Pass looked okay because outside of that, like, we knew Louisville was going to be overwhelmed. So I was trying to find like the silver lining for the Cardinals, right? Number one, like, the score was 51-14, but I didn't come away from this game thinking that Louisville was going to be this trash team all year, right? Even though the score was pretty indicative of what we thought was going to happen. I was pretty pleased, at least at the outset, that they weren't getting completely boat raced in the opening like 12 to 13 minutes of this game. Like, Louisville hung relatively tough. It was clear they didn't have a chance, right? It was just Alabama was just overwhelming them on both sides of the football. But with that being said, like, it just seemed like Juwan Pass has a future as the quarterback, and he's going to live up to the hype, and he made some plays in the passing game, and it was clear they were overmatched, but you could see some things that they were doing that they can build on moving forward. And like you said, not the first time Alabama's got to boat race a team, certainly not the last. This is a tune-up game for them, no doubt. And it probably wasn't supposed to be a tune-up game when it was scheduled, but, give credit to Louisville. I mean, they tried. It was just Alabama's on another level right now.
This game really kind of was pretty much a boat race. Louisville forced 1-3 and out in this game, put it that way, and it was in the last 5 minutes of the game, right? They never really put up that much of a fight. They got a couple of punts out of Alabama in the first half, but they were already down 21-0, and this whole thing just snowballed really quickly. This is kind of what we expected. Alabama, really, really good. Louisville still, you know, in a bit of a rebuild, you know, replacing the defense, defensive coordinator, replacing Lamar Jackson, all this stuff. So, this is pretty much what I expected. Alabama covers 25, not to anybody's surprise. Mike, we got a backdoor cover in the ACC, and that was from your North Carolina Tar Heels. Cal 24, North Carolina 17. North Carolina scores a touchdown about midway through the fourth quarter to pull this, it was 24-3 when they got the ball back in the fourth quarter. They score a couple of touchdowns late to get the what I'll call a backdoor push, even, which that sounds even worse. 24-17 on a 7-point spread. Nathan Elliott, not great. 15-35, 137 yards, a touchdown, 4 interceptions. North Carolina is missing a lot of guys for this game and just never. It took a while for them to look like they were going to give a decent threat here to Cal. So, I mean, just overall a pretty disappointing effort, I think, for the Tar Heels as you look at this, even considering the guys that were suspended for this game.
I'm fully confident in my North Carolina last place in the Coastal pick after watching this. Cal's not that good, and North Carolina was completely overwhelmed for 3.5 quarters. Nathan Elliott, man, good luck, man. I don't know. Like,
he was their leading rusher.
Okay. Good. Oh, good. Christ.
Put it this way. The best thing I can say about your quarterback is he led the team with 58 rushing yards.
Yeah, that's the best thing you could say really about the effort the entire game, honestly. Yeah, North Carolina stinks. There's just no two ways around it at this point. I don't want to make, like I said, I try not to make too many overarching, crazy, off-the-wall reactions to week one because we don't really have that much data yet. But North Carolina just doesn't look well coached, and it's very weird. It's a complete 180 from like 2 years ago when Fedora was the toast of the town, and now look at where this program's at. It's unbelievable how they've fallen.
I was going to say that was the one thing I kept thinking about in the aftermath of this game was how far and how quickly UNC has fallen off. Man, I mean, it was, what was it, just 2 years ago that they were playing in the ACC championship game and even put up a decent fight against Clemson, and then their quarterback became the number one draft pick in the NFL, and next thing you know, they've gone 3-9, and now they've lost again, and not in a particularly impressive fashion here. I think if you're a Tar Heel fan, you've got to hope that getting some players back from suspension will boost the team and help things, but man, this is just it is surprising to me how quickly and how violently North Carolina has fallen off of their pedestal in the Coastal Division. I will be surprised if we're looking back on this here in a couple of months and saying, how on earth did North Carolina lose this game? I mean, it's just I'm getting that vibe that I think you are, Mike, of this program has fallen apart quickly.
It's happening on multiple levels. So I don't know. And it's going to be a long season, I think, for the Heels.
Yep. Move on. Mike, we told you this game was going to get a little weird. And sure enough, it did. Wake Forest 23, Tulane 17 in overtime. This was Thursday night.
Cuse on the cover, baby. On the cover.
That's right. That's right. Go Green Wave. So Wake Forest, first of all, start here. Sam Hartman, holy cow. Sam Hartman looked really good in this game for Wake Forest. He was confident and commanding of this offense for probably about, you know, the go from like the start of the second quarter to like midway through the fourth quarter. Sam Hartman looked great in this game for the most part. 31 of 51, 378, two touchdowns. He did have two picks, Mike, and it was about midway through the fourth quarter that he threw an interception that was just a peak freshman moment. And that was where things started to fall apart for him a little bit.
I could have thrown that pick.
Yeah,
it wasn't good. That's definitely where things took a turn. Like, you could see Hartman like progressively getting more confident as the game went on, and then he started throwing picks, and it was like, oh well, this changed quickly. Yeah, I mean, the takeaway here for Wake Forest is like, you got a guy in Sam Hartman that could be a 4-year starter, and Kendall Hinton, I'm sorry, like, you might not be getting your job back. Like, I get it was a narrow win, and Wake Forest escaped more or less in this football game, but good Lord, man. Sam Hartman's got some talent. Wake's going to be decent. Dave Clawson has him well coached. And give some credit to Tulane, too. You know, we talked about Willie Frist and the job he's done there. I mean, Tulane was right in this game. Obviously, the game went to overtime, and they were right in it throughout, but hey, credit to Wake Forest, credit to Sam Hartman stepping in as a true freshman and playing as well as he did for the most part. There are a lot of things to build off of, and he is a freshman, so there will be some growing pains, but I mean, a heck of a first effort.
Wake did okay with running the ball, 170 yards on 43 carries. It started off a little bit slow. They got Cade Carney and Matt Colburn going, especially late in the game. I think the real story on that offense was Sage Surratt and Greg Dortch combining for 23 receptions and 299 yards through the air. They were all over the place. Tulane had no answer for them. And that was really the thing I think that kept Wake in the game, a lot of this, and enabled them to win. I was impressed with the way that Wake handled this. It was a tough game, hard fought. I mean, obviously it went to overtime. It went down to the very end. And so the way that it all turned out, I mean, again, I'm impressed with the Steaming Deacs and think that with Sam Hartman, you've got a bright future, and things are looking up for Wake Forest this year, I think, if that's fair to say.
I think it's fair to say. It's going to be a little bit of a rebuild, right? We acknowledge that in our season preview. It would be a little bit of a rebuild, and it would be completely contingent, really, on how well the quarterbacks played in the first 4 weeks, because we figured it was probably Sam Hartman, but we weren't entirely sure, of course, with Kendall Hinton being suspended. So, hey, Wake Forest, good opening win, you know, keep trying to build on that.
They've got a tougher schedule ahead if you look at some of these teams, especially in the first half. You know, Boston College, Notre Dame, Clemson, all in the first six games of the year. But there are going to be wins there for Wake Forest to take. They just got to make sure that they convert on those opportunities and don't fudge games that really are the opportunity to win. They can easily be back in bowl season. So go Deeks. Moving on, Mike. Syracuse 55, Western Michigan 42. Orange look real good.
They did. This is 5 minutes ago I yelled out Cuse on the cover because I thought we were doing this game. Then I realized we were talking about Wake Forest. So I'll try again. Cuse on the cover. Mm-hmm. Eric Dungy, like, what do you have, like over 300 yards passing, over 200 yards rushing?
Kind of the other way around. He was 7 of 17 for 184 and two touchdowns passing, but 15 carries for 200 yards, including a 49-yard run on his end. He was real good, has not yet dialed back the running game like we maybe thought he was going to this year.
Yes, he is going to die by October. So get your wins in now while you can, Syracuse, because I didn't see anything in that opener that would suggest that he's not going to get hurt again. He took some shots in this game, Joey. I mean, he took a couple of big time hits I wasn't sure he was getting up from. So if you have the over under at 6.5 games for Dungy as far as health this year, take the under. All jokes aside, hope he stays healthy because he is outstanding at quarterback. He is a lot of fun. Doesn't get enough love because he keeps getting hurt. But, I mean, he's a really good player when he's in. And Syracuse is a different team when he's manning the controls.
This was a shootout, Mike, again. 55-42, a really high total. The concerning thing to me for Syracuse is that they really let Western Michigan back in this game in the second half. Yeah, they were up 34-7 at halftime. Western Michigan scores touchdowns on four of their first five drives of the second half, and none of them were long. Like, those four drives were a combined, I think, 10 plays. I mean, three plays, two plays. That's 10 plays for a combined four touchdowns. 37-yard pass, 21-yard pass, 84-yard pass, 64-yard run, 59-yard pass. Like, it was like, you know, Syracuse put it into the super sim mode on NCAA football. Like,
oh, intervene. Okay, got to get back in.
Yeah. Oh crap. You know, it's like nobody's at the wheel here. You know, that was where the game went from 34-7 all the way up to 41-35. You know, this went from a 4-score game to a 1-score game, and that's concerning. Again, Syracuse and their defense has not been the most sturdy unit over the last couple of years. And so really would have liked to see him get a team down and then hold them down. But Western Michigan pulls off a bunch of big plays there in the second half. And Syracuse thankfully able to tighten it up through the rest of the game and hold them down from there. But man, it was got a little bit dicey there for a second. So Syracuse, work on that.
Yeah, Dino Babers, keep Dungy in a little bit longer next time when your defense. Mm-hmm. I mean, your defense is not good. Like, he's going to have to play.
Mm-hmm.
So keep an eye on that. I mean, the Syracuse defense still isn't good, so they're going to have to put up 55 a game to keep things interesting. But they can. So to their benefit, if the defense even makes a small stride forward heading into the coming weeks, you know, maybe we're talking about Syracuse in the context of, oh, can they make a bowl game? But that's contingent on a lot of different things, including Dungy's health, which is anything but a given.
Yep. Mike, only game of the weekend that we were both wrong on the spread. We both had Army plus 13.5 against Duke. Duke 34, Army 14, Blue Devils cover.
Ruined my parlay on Friday night.
As only Duke can. This was never really a game in question for Duke. They were up 17-0 at halftime, got up 24-7 in the, you know, late in the second half. Ultimately, they kind of cruised. Army had a couple of opportunities, but Duke blocks a field goal in the fourth quarter to keep Army from being able to make this a 2-score game. Ultimately, the Blue Devils roll. Daniel Jones looked pretty freaking good, 13-17 for 197 and a touchdown. Also had 43 yards on the ground for a touchdown there as well. Britton Brown, 11 carries for 75 yards. Blue Devils did not really show a hitch in the step early in the year. They looked pretty good here right out the gate.
Good start.
Yep.
I mean, Daniel Jones was good. Army couldn't stop him. Keep an eye on that. Daniel Jones, the runner, is a real thing. So also, I mean, if Britton Brown, Britton Brown was very good. He hyperextended his knee, which looked really ugly. So hopefully he's okay moving forward. But he looked good when he was in, and Daniel Jones looked very good all night. So maybe we can move past the sophomore slump Daniel Jones and back towards, oh, Daniel Jones, one of the best quarterbacks in the conference. And if that's the case, Duke's going to be a problem this year because they're going to be well coached.
Mike, you know which quarterback weirdly might have the best stats in the conference right now?
Who would that be, Joey?
That's Anthony Brown for Boston College.
Good transition. I like it.
Yeah, nailed it. Boston College 55, UMass 21. Holy cow, Anthony Brown. Mike and I, we were texting a little bit last week. I texted him a screen grab of his stats from last year. Looking at how he really struggled to complete a lot of passes, his completion numbers were not good.
Pause if you've heard that one before. Boston College quarterback struggles to complete passes.
Yeah, but the thing was, we talked about him like he had this breakout year, and I looked back at the numbers. I'm like, I mean, did he? Like, he completed like 54% of his passes or something. Like, I mean, I wasn't convinced. Excuse me, it was 52% of his passes. 11 touchdowns, 9 interceptions. Like, excuse me if that's not a breakout season. Mike, in this game, 15 of 21 for 279 and 4 touchdowns. Anthony Brown was on fire in this game.
He was, which is good because, you know, it was clear that UMass keyed on A.J. Dillon, which is, I mean, what you have to do, key on the run. Boston College is a hard team to evaluate because, like you said, Anthony Brown looks really good against non-power opponents, right? And then he comes in and, you know, really wows you when you actually watch him play throwing the ball. And granted, once again, you know, it is just UMass, but you have to be really happy with his development if you're a Boston College fan, because look, the Eagles' problem over the years has been we don't have a quarterback. We have everything else, running game, defense, we got it. We even have some players on the outside who can make a few plays here and there. We just don't have a quarterback. Anthony Brown, really encouraging here because A.J. Dillon, 20 carries for 98 yards. You know, it was clear they were trying to get him going, but UMass keyed on it. So they said, hey, beat us with your arm. Anthony Brown said, no problem. Easy win for Boston College. Have to be really thrilled with the passing game. If you're a BC fan, let's just see if Anthony Brown carries it forward. Because look, if he keeps this going against, like, I don't know, conference opponents, BC is going to be a problem.
Yeah, as we said, I mean, they're a credible passing threat away from being like maybe the second best team in the Atlantic this year, especially given what we just saw from Florida State, given what we saw from a couple teams this weekend. I don't see any reason that there's somebody in the Atlantic clearly better than Boston College with a functional passing offense outside of, you know, Clemson, who's better than pretty much everybody.
Yeah, I agree.
You know, really good showing from Boston College here. They really they made it a point, too, to put UMass down early in this game. It was tied at 7, and then next thing you know, it was 48-7 at halftime. And Boston College pulls the starters, and UMass scores some garbage time points. But this game got done early, and really, again, easy, good showing from Boston College to get it going for this year. Mike, that's all we got in the way of FBS on FBS competition. We have a couple more games that happened. One of the ones we need to talk about here, NC State 24, James Madison 13. This was one of the ones that we warned the people about, said that this one could get a little bit weird. You know, you could look up and see, hey, it's a 3 or 4 point game in the third quarter. And sure enough, it was. At one point in the fourth quarter, James Madison kicks a field goal with 7 minutes to go to make it 17-13. This was an uncomfortably close game for NC State.
Yeah, we thought it might be. A lot of questions on both sides of the ball for NC State entering the game. Ultimately, by the end, I mean, they looked like the better team. But hard to take away much of anything from this. Like, it was about what I expected. I thought JMU would play hard and play well, and they did. And I thought NC State would ultimately show that they were the better team, and they did. So there's not really a lot I can really glean from this game from a perspective of like projecting NC State moving forward. Like, I still think they're pretty good. I just think James Madison is a really credible FCS opponent that was able to hang tough in a game where NC State was, look, I mean, they replaced a lot of starters on both sides of the football. So a good win for NC State. You avoid the blunder in the opener. Of course, you got West Virginia here in a couple of weeks. So keep an eye on that one.
Ben DiNucci, 23-27 for 197 and a touchdown. Marcus Marshall, 12 carries for 65 yards. You know, they look good in this. Oh, wait, that was for James Madison.
Wait,
these are our old ACC friends now playing for James Madison. So if you're wondering, again, why the Dukes made this a game, recognize that they're not just any old FCS team. And in fact, they're probably, around the quality of like a middle to upper tier, like G5 level team. Like
the ACC retirement home, as you refer to it, you know?
So. Yeah. They would be and will be a problem for a lot of pretty decent Power 5 teams. So this is not a game where you need to be questioning NC State and how good they are. I mean, they got it done when it counted. They never really ran away with it, but this was an overall decent performance from them. If there's anything I'm concerned about, maybe it's that they struggled to run the ball in this game. 29 carries for 83 yards as a team. Reggie Gillespie, 17 carries for 68 yards. That's not super encouraging, but Ryan Finley looked really good. 29 of 43 for 309 and 2 touchdowns, no picks. So it's one of those things that NC State, maybe you were hoping for or expecting a little bit better, saying I'm going to go play an FCS team, but again, this ain't just any old FCS team. So you kind of got what you paid for there. And thankfully, you didn't get beat and came away with a win.
Just survive in advance, even if it's week one. Just get your win and get out of there, especially against a team that boasts, like you said, decent amount of FBS talent. So I don't know. James Madison's been a player in the FCS for a while, so this isn't a huge surprise they were able to hang with a credible FBS team.
Yep. Pittsburgh 33, Albany 7. All the scoring in this game happened in the first half, which is something noteworthy. Pitt's offense was okay, not great. They ran the ball decently, but and I guess overall were fairly efficient with their plays, but weren't as good at maybe establishing a passing threat and such against Albany as I would have hoped they would be.
Yeah, fair. I mean, good win for Pittsburgh. I don't know anything about them. It's Albany, yeah. Right? I mean, where are we supposed to say it's Albany in the opener? So good win for Pitt. I don't know. We'll
learn infinitely more about Pittsburgh next week.
yeah, we will. And maybe we'll learn more about Penn State too, because side note for our Big Ten friends, that was interesting.
Yeah. Sure was. I don't know what to make of that.
And they survived.
For those unaware, Appalachian State scored a touchdown with under 2 minutes to go in Happy Valley to take the lead over Penn State. Penn State comes back and scores a touchdown before, to send the game to overtime, and then ends up winning by 7 in overtime. So, not really how you draw it up when you're Penn State taking on App State in Happy Valley, but hey, maybe it's just the first week jitters. Maybe it's a fluke. Maybe Pitt has a really good chance to knock off Penn State next week at home. But hey, we'll come back and talk about that in our preview show. Mike, Virginia 42, Richmond 13. Bryce Perkins.
I like him. I like him, Joey. He's okay.
Still not the most accurate passer. 13 to 24 for 185, 2 touchdowns and a pick. But added something in the run game, 13 carries for 108 yards and 2 touchdowns. Jordan Ellis, 20 carries, 146 yards, 2 touchdowns. Virginia overall looked fine here. We'll say fine. I don't know how much anybody's going to look good beating a mediocre Richmond team. But let's say this, it was never really that much of a game after the first half or so. Richmond actually goes up 10-7. Middle of the first quarter, and then UVA kind of hit the jets, and this thing was over pretty quickly. It went out to 35-10 pretty quickly.
I mean, in Virginia's defense, it's better than losing to a mediocre Richmond team like they did 2 years ago. So,
yeah, progress.
Yeah. Good win, Virginia. You didn't lose to an FCS team in the opener. Bryce Perkins is all right. He's all right.
Yeah. You take an
eye on him. You know,
you take it. My Georgia Tech Yellow Jackets 41, Alcorn State nothing. offense rusty. There was some good. There was probably more questionable to bad. And it feels decent to say that when they go for 439 yards and 4 touchdowns on the ground. But the biggest sticking point from last year being Taquan Marshall's passing, you didn't really feel a whole lot better about it in this game. Still some accuracy woes. You might be overthinking it. I don't really know. A lot of skill talent there. Again, so maybe some questions about how good the offensive line is going to be, but they were banged up. They were missing probably two of their three best offensive linemen, and Dean Cooper and Andrew Marshall. So a much bigger test coming up this week against USF. More importantly to me, first of all, the uniforms look great. Go Adidas, go Three Stripe Life. But the defense.
I miss Russell.
You're the only one, Mike. The only one. And other than that, the defense actually looked really good. They were much more aggressive and much more active and kind of harassing of the other team than I've ever seen a Georgia Tech defense in several years. Just a lot more plays being made in the backfield, a lot more just aggressive play that, if nothing else, makes it more interesting to watch on television. They were able to stifle a lot of Alcorn State drives just by putting pressure on them and getting them behind the sticks. And that's good enough, honestly, in college. Like, you get a team behind the sticks, they're going to get pressure to try to get it all back. And there's not a lot of quarterbacks out there that can really drive a team to do that. So I liked what I saw from the defense, looking for maybe some more against USF this coming week. But overall, a good start for Georgia Tech.
Good start. Like you said, got to clean some things up, but I mean, it's 41-0, so it's great.
Yep. Yeah. Yep. Mike, last thing, I just want to toot my own horn. I was correct. Furman scored. Furman scored on Clemson, 48, Tigers 48, Furman University Christian Knights, work that one out in your head, it's 7 points. Furman did score in the fourth quarter. They got a touchdown in late in the game with about a minute and 18 to go. Clemson just kind of rolls here. This was easy. Kelly Bryant, 11 of 16, 127 and a touchdown. Trevor Lawrence, 9 of 15 and 3 touchdowns. Just, take notes.
Keep an eye on that.
Other than that, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Keep an eye on that.
Yeah, there was some back and forth. Just keep that in mind. Other than that, I mean, it was Clemson. It was what you expected. They got up and they just kind of cruised. I mean, that's what we expected here.
They're pretty good.
That's what I'm told. I didn't watch that game myself, so I mean, I haven't seen it with my eyes yet, but I'm told they're pretty good. I've heard good things. Moving That's all on. I got. Yeah. I don't know. Yeah. Mike, for those new to the program, typically on these recap shows, we go with a couple of specific segments at the end, one being the Brian Van Gorder Memorial You Tried Award, and one being the Go ACC moment of the week.
Joey, let's just do it. What the hell?
All right, let's do it. You got candidates here. We got some things we can kind of look to and maybe pull out of the old hat here.
Yeah, the Brian Van Gorder You Tried Award goes to Malik Rozier.
Oof.
you tried to look competent on national TV. And you failed.
Tried to convince us that you were the answer to Miami's offensive woes. You failed.
Yeah, failed. So that was easy.
Yeah, not great.
He needs to be better.
Yeah, he really does. So congratulations to Malik Rozier. As our buddy Cam refers to him, 12.
12.
You win the first Brian Van Gorder Memorial You Tried Award of the season, and it's especially special now that the notorious BVG himself is back in the league. He could not stay away. We can't rename the award, though. It just becomes more special with him around.
It does. And I have a Go ACC moment of the week candidate for you.
I actually have one as well, but I'm curious to hear yours.
Okay, well, let me start, shall I?
Please do.
Cam Akers breaks an 85-yard run in the Virginia Tech game. He gets down to around the 1 yard line. Yeah, Florida State proceeds to back things up a couple yards, and then, we really need a score here. Hey, I have an idea. Let's run the Wild Seminole, which is what I'm calling it. It's basically their version of the Wildcat. And Cam Akers then proceeds to fumble for their fourth turnover of the night, and that really put things out of reach for Florida State. Virginia Tech goes down, scores, ball game. Yeah.
Goodness, Mike. And if you go back and watch it, if I'm remembering correctly, so this is, by the way, this is my candidate as well, is this super, super weird play call. It was like 3rd and 8 from the 12-yard line. I mean, they're in the red zone. They're about to score.
Gimmicky.
It was gimmicky. But so not only was Cam Akers lined up, they didn't have a quarterback in the game, I don't think. I think it was just a straight up, it was a direct snap to him. But they also were lined up in like the diamond. Like, I think there were people flanking him on either side and behind him, which asked, like, how many running backs did you have on the field and what did anybody think you were going to do there? I don't really know what in the world that was. That was the strangest play call. I think another another candidate here is earlier in the game, I think in the first quarter, Florida State, I think it was a third down play. They ran a pass, again, in the red zone. Player was tackled just short of the goal line. If you go look at the review, it actually looks like he scored. But Florida State was so quick to get up to the line and try to run another play before anybody could review it, even though it would have benefited them, they false started. And then even though they could have still gone back and reviewed the play, you know, after the false start, they still hurried up to go run another play. And it was just – it was a massive missed opportunity for the Noles. And I think they ended up going scoreless on that drive altogether.
Missed a field goal.
Yeah, they missed a field goal. So that's what it was. I mean, so they come away with no points when they should have had a touchdown, right? Yeah. It was a bit of a calamity of errors for Florida State in that game. But another Go ACC moment of the week candidate, I think, was, it's like one of those things where my dog is looking for the treat and it's right under her nose and she's like, I don't know where to go, like what to do. It's like, you had it. You had it. Like, yeah. just take it. Like,
yeah. Real quick, Florida State ran 10 plays in the red zone. And Joey, those went for negative 11 yards.
Ooh.
Not good. Clean that up.
Yeah. Work on that.
Joey, real quick, one other award that we're going to debut here.
Oh, hell yeah. Bust it out. Let's go.
It's our ACC dumpster fire of the week.
Oh, dear.
Nathan Elliott of North Carolina. Larry Fedora of North Carolina. Co-recipients. Congratulations. Larry Fedora, job security. Not good. Not good.
What in the hell is going on in Chapel Hill?
Nathan Elliott, I have five fingers on my hand. Now I have four. That's how many interceptions you threw.
Mm-hmm.
So,
ouch.
Yeah, bad. Really bad.
Very, very bad.
They're a dumpster fire on that backdoor cover, though.
Yeah. At least you can give them that. They did. They did get the backdoor cover, which is good enough, I guess. You still lost.
Yeah.
So we'll see if that turns around. But who's to say at this point? Mike, anything else before we get out of here?
Pretty good first recap, huh?
I think so. It was a good week. There was some interesting matchups, and even a lot of the FCS matchups. Again, we kind of were able to learn a little bit of something about these teams to some degree. And I don't know. I think it was solid. I'll take it. Next week's slate looks a little less juicy or entertaining. So a little bit of a letdown, but. There's also a couple of pretty interesting games at the top, I think. Probably four games in particular that I'm really interested to talk about. So we will come back and talk about those soon. In the meantime, you guys can find us on Twitter. I am at FTRS Joey. He is at Mike McDaniel CFB. And together we're at BC Podcast ACC. Y'all can send us an email to the longest email address known to man, basketballconferencepodcast@gmail.com.
Nailed it.
Uh-huh. You can find us on iTunes, Google Play, SoundCloud, the Overcast app, wherever fine podcasts are sold for free. And Mike, breaking news, I've actually put in to see if we can get on Spotify. So,
breaking news to me as well.
That is correct. So not yet, but at some point in the near future, you might be able to find the good old Basketball Conference Podcast out there on Spotify. So keep an eye out for that. Mike, tell us where else they can find us in the social medias.
They can find us on Facebook, facebook.com/basketballconference. Rate, review, find all of our podcasts there, Joey.
Please do. Please do. You can also find us on YouTube if you want to go search for us and our videos and our channel.
You know what's weird? Real quick. You know what's weird?
Yes, sir.
We have subscribers on YouTube.
We have subscribers, and maybe even weirder is we have commenters. We've got a comment section. I don't know how I feel about this.
for better or worse. You don't feel good about it so far, I'll tell you that.
Mike, I'm told that there was a game at some point this past week that we were wrong about. I don't know how I feel about that. It's kind of messing with me here. I thought we had everything pretty much right, but somebody should have pointed out that we got one of them wrong. I don't know which one, so I'll have to keep investigating. I'll let you know what I find out.
Yeah, keep an eye on that. And hey, imagine that we're wrong about some of our opinions.
I doubt it.
Yeah, I doubt it too. Freaking experts.
So come join the discussion on YouTube if you are so inclined. Again, just search for Basketball Conference on YouTube. Our videos are all going to be up there of these discussions. Mike, let's come back and preview week two.
Yeah, let's do it. 1 week down, unfortunately.
Get some rest. Rest your voice. You seem exhausted.
I'm really struggling. Long weekend. A lot of liquid consumed and catching up with me a little bit.
There you go. It sounds like a good weekend. It was a little bit of how mine went as well. But in any case, Mike, we'll come back soon and preview week two.
Sounds good, buddy.
Hell yeah. Well, for that guy, Mr. Mike McDaniel, I am Joey Weaver. Thank you guys so much for listening. We'll talk to you again soon. And until next time, go ACC.